would be many years before the island would know peace. For now, Anansi collected the stories of the dead, the angry, and the broken. Each story was at once complete and at the same time a smaller part of a whole. The deaths, the killing, the love, and the rebirth, these were chapters, parts of a narrative that had lured him not just to this place, but to this entire world that some called new, but that Anansi intuited was old enough to contain itself and large enough to take on all the others as well. It has been a long time, dear listener. History has missed you like fools miss a romanticized past, like the followers of Anansi, or those who Anansi followed, miss their liberty. But for this, the final chapter in Kamau's story, at least for a while, I needed to research and be sure that I was, as always, a reliable narrator of these histories. So I visited libraries that were older than books, read ancient texts of stories that were never written down, and listened to the old tales of the Yoruba, the Ashanti, and many other tribes, some of whose names were lost forever on that bloody passage from the majestic continent to the place that stole her children. The battle between the Obaifo and the Hunter transformed the mountains of the island. You see, the island was never meant to contain the forces that fate and sin had brought to its shores. So when Samuel Sharp was hanged and the heads of his followers and those presumed to be his followers were scattered across the plantations as a warning against rebellion, the planter class had another thing to fear. Something else that they had unwittingly summoned in their selfish attempt to build a world on the scarred backs of another. Here, we look to the Maroon histories as our primary source. These men and women who could not read or write in a manner that we understood kept records in their own way, through song. And so, to examine the final battle between the Obaifo and the Hunter, we must review unconventional sources. We will examine the product of Maroon historians, the only ones who looked at the forgotten histories in close enough detail to tell us of this almost mythical event. And we must listen to the words of the infamous Maroon epic, Blue Mountain Falling. Many historians, including myself, have always believed that this now infamous Maroon song is about the final battle between Kamau and the Hunter, an event for which nobody was present, except maybe one at once both famous and mysterious historical character. Very few outside of the close-knit Maroon community have ever heard Blue Mountain Falling. But today we will listen to a section of it closely and try to decipher the metaphor from the material fact. So without any further ado, let us begin. Ahem. Blue Mountain fallen, Sam Sharp mama ballin, the rooster with the broken beak callin, every plant of a woman screamin, cry out, every living thing and everything that is living, because the Blue Mountain them fallin. Blue Mountain fallen like a man who run and trip. Listen to the monster's footsteps like the ones I'm sent to catch it. Eyes black like the edge of the overseer's whip. But this is not a game of cat and mouse, it is a game of blood and spit. Watch out for the big teeth that only know how to tear and rip. Destroying the Blue Mountains, falling apart under the force of it. Blue Mountain fallen like a woman who can't take no more. Thunder boom, but no lightning flash and no rain pour. Cover your eyes as the black-eyed monster roar, fighting against the men who are not men anymore. Lash out, big black arms and big black bodies to the floor, as the Blue Mountains fall and the monster leaves the island shore. The first verse of the song places it within the same historical context as the events we are interested in. It accounts for the execution of the pastor and freedom fighter Samuel Sharp, along with the beheading of hundreds of slaves. This event itself would have rightfully seemed apocalyptic at the time. The Maroon song is remarkable because while it is well known that the Obaifo, the Hunter, and the contingent almost destroyed the island with their battle, there are countless merchant and government documents that relate this terror. There are, however, very few sources that cover the actual fighting. But until now, history has tended to be pale, with light eyes, straight hair, and thin lips. This history fills the shelves of universities that would consider themselves ancient. But this story does not belong to them. This story was told by the thick-lipped, coarse-haired descendants of kings who became slaves, whose freedom was their only credential, and whose bodies were covered not in robes, but in the regal garb of the warrior scholar whose knowledge was earned through effort that was physical as well as mental. From these sources, we are told of the origin of the song, Blue Mountain Falling. The genesis was recorded in the local history of an almost forgotten Maroon village. The author's name is not known, but many other things included in this text have already been validated by sources that perhaps you would consider more traditional. In this text, our unknown historian writes, quote, "When Nanny, the Maroon Queen, returned to her village, her always steady hands were shaking ever so slightly, and a single tear traced the beautiful lines of power that life had carved into her face. We were all confused and afraid. She was the eye of the hurricane. She had stared down hundreds of colonial soldiers with an unflinching resolve, but something had shaken the unshakable woman. We all knew where she had went. The monster from the old place and his pursuers were destroying the mountains with their war. Maroon villages had been burnt by the man with the scar on his face as he searched for the one that Nanny called Kamau, and the rest of us didn't dare to name. So Nanny, and Nanny alone, had gone to put an end to the destruction. But that had been many days ago, and we had not heard the sounds of their fighting or the roar of the monster in at least a week. When Nanny was ready, she told us that the old powers took her to Kamau, and that together they had fought against the men who were not men. But even the monster's strength and her power were almost not enough. The war intensified, and she warned us to tread carefully now, because there were now cliffs where before there had been none, the fighting destroying pieces of the mountain. Eventually, however, Nanny and Kamau overcame their hunters, but they soon realized that even they could not stop the contingent. For while they could knock these creatures down, the power they served was too far-reaching to be stopped in this time. And she did not just mean the stench of the red-robed creature Nanny could sense all over the one who called himself Hunter. She meant the insignia on the hilt of the swords that they all carried, the silver and gold that rattled in their pockets and their mouths as they fought. She meant the crown. So Kamau left again, realizing that the island was too small to contain the type of war that he needed to wage. And as sure as the monsters followed him into the mountains before, they now got on boats and followed the canoe that Nanny had fashioned for him using her craft and her other craft. And they all headed again into the big blue water." End quote. There are enough records that confirm the war and the contingent's departure, but none are as close to being first-hand accounts as this anonymous piece of history. The Maroon lore is that Nanny's account of the fighting, along with the real impact of the war that lasted for weeks, was so profound that it inspired the Maroon song, Blue Mountain Falling. But what of Kamau? We all know that the infamous Obaifo did not disappear into the blue waters of the sea that became an ocean. He continued his exploits, pursued by the hunter in his relentless quest for vengeance. But if Kamau was the earliest and most remarkable of the fantastical creatures who were pulled from the place you now know as Africa, he was certainly not the last. There are countless histories to research as we continue to listen to the unheard and examine the forgotten. I look forward to taking this journey with you.